Good morning. I want to welcome everyone here this morning, and happy to be here too. This morning, my title of my message is a question, and that is, how are you planning to stay faithful? And I would like if, I know you're sitting down, settling in here, but like if everyone would stand and like to sing number 467 in the Faith and Praise. As we sing that, I'd like to just to be thinking about our plan to stay faithful. Seated. So when we ask the question, how are you planning to stay faithful? You know, I think the one thing that I would like to just say at first is that this is not about, I'll stay faithful or will I not stay faithful? This is about, will we overcome? How will it be when we come to Judgment Day? How will it be when we come to meet our Savior, Jesus? Will it be? Will we have been faithful? And it's not a light question. And I really want that to remember that today as I share. I have only three verses that my whole message is based upon or that I'm coming from really this morning. And I'll read these again, but I'll read them at the very, very first. In 1 Corinthians 10:12, it says, "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." And then in Hebrews 3:12, it says, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." And then in 1 Timothy 4:16, it says, "Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. So I have quite a few questions that I'm asking this morning, and I'd like us to ponder them in our own minds, these questions, to help us to think. So what keeps our faith strong enough to keep standing for truth? What is it that keeps our faith strong? What helps us to be willing to stand alone when no one else is willing to stand? Or what is going to help you, help me, to keep standing for the things that you believe in when you're really tested? You're going to be tested, or you have been tested, or you are being tested. And I know people, and you know people, who say very strongly that they stand for Anabaptist way of living, but they changed their minds or have changed their minds. And they spoke about those things so much of being the right way, but today they're not important anymore. And I have a number of relatives that were that way, but I was especially thinking of one of my first cousins who I grew up with in the same community, and he was very vocal about this is the right way. This is right, and if you didn't do it like he thought, he was very critical. And he had answers. He seemed to always have answers. He seemed to be very vocal in his answers, and also in his opinions. And I don't remember thinking one way or another about this particular cousin that I had, but I remember it wasn't too long after we had been married, and that I heard that his family, I don't know how many children they have, maybe four or five children, that they were not Anabaptists anymore. And you know, I heard a lot of that, and I thought, well, that's a pretty big step for him. All the stuff he said, you know, that's went through my mind. And but you know, even today, right now, his children are not, I don't know if his children even, I'm concerned that his children are not even Christians. And that bothers me. You know, he got tested. In some way, he was tested, and he did not stand. He was not faithful. And what changed? What made him feel okay about it, to all of a sudden change like that? Why are people taught to do good things and practice important Bible teachings, but over time they decide that those things they have been taught are not important anymore? And is it because that, you know, we become better at interpreting Bible doctrine? You know, we know that's not true. And I'm changing a little bit now, but what causes us to yield to temptation when we know that it's sin? It's obvious that it's sin. But yet, we fail. We sometimes, and sometimes people do it even more than others, but we're tempted to sin, and we know that sin is wrong, but we still fail. If we know something is, why do we even flirt with that temptation? And there are many questions that we can ask ourselves. I have more, but we need to answer these questions in our own heart, or ponder them in our own heart. What is it going to do? What are we going to do to stay faithful when we get hit with a storm? And I believe in a lot of good things, so long as I'm not tested severely, and I'm being hard on myself there. But what we think we would do when we're tested is not always what we'll do. And I think that each of us have been in those shoes where we think that we're going to be able to stand, but I think that we need to make sure that we're grounded in the right thing. We hope that we will be strong, but how can we really know how we will fare in the final test or the real test? Remember, Peter believed that he would never deny Jesus, even in the hardest times, but he did. And I don't think that I'm any better off than Peter, because I can see myself responding exactly how Peter did. And why? For me, it's because I think I care what other people think too much. and I think that we're all influenced that way. We have our faith and practice that we abide by. We use it to help us know more specifically how we agree to practice certain doctrines. And these are not things that salvation comes from necessarily, but only a means of making our belief in practice more hands-on in our local congregation and also in our generation that we live in. We agree with these and we live by them as long as we are a member of our local church, whatever they are in the local church. But some Christians get misled by trusting these faith and practice on a little higher level than they do Jesus Christ. And then when the time of testing comes, they don't have enough trust in Jesus to see through the very thing that they're being tested on. And their faith begins to waver because they're not grounded in the right thing. What about you? Is your faith in Jesus solid? That's a question we need to ask ourselves. Is our faith in the foundation, is it in the rock? If we took our faith and practice away in this church right now, if we just took it away, how many of would you be able to continue standing faithfully? Is that where your faith is based upon? I know you say you would, but you should think about it. Would you? And you know, young people, I'm not picking on you, young people. I'm just wanting you to ask this question: if your parents passed away today, how long would you continue living for Jesus? How long would you continue living like you are right now? You know, your parents keep you accountable, and I know other people do too, but what if they weren't living today? What do you have in place that will help you be strong, that will help you continue on being faithful? And these are real issues. These are not just hypothetical questions. These are real issues that Christians all over the world are dealing with. And they're not things that you can say, well, oh, that'll never happen. They do happen. And they're real in our lives here and in lives all over the world. Now I'm changing again a little bit on a little different area. You know, I believe that sin, it has always been easy to sin. It's easy to sin. It's not hard to sin. But it's hard to repent. And I believe it's always been that way. But in the last number of years, I'm not going to say how many years, I'm just going to leave that open. I believe that it's become even easier to sin than what it was a number of years ago. And I believe the reason is because of technology. Technology has made sin convenient. It's convenient to sin now, and it didn't used to be as convenient. So, you know, how are you going to stand? And my concern, or I think that what really is at stake this morning is just it's a very simple question that we really, do we have enough trust in Jesus to keep us from falling? When our props that we're trusting in right now, whatever they are, when they start shaking, when the hurricane comes, when the storm comes, what's going to happen to us then? Do we have it in the right spot, in the right place, in the right foundation, that we can continue on standing? Do we have a plan? What is going to help us to be faithful? And then I'd like to go over my verses that I read at the beginning. I'd like to read those again and now implant them more strongly into our minds. In 1 Corinthians 10:12 says, "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." And that verse is bringing to us caution. You know, think about it. Just don't ever think if you think that you've got it made, that you're going to stand. This verse is saying, don't do that. Beware about that. Don't get yourself in those shoes. Always remember that you need a plan to be able to stand. You don't know what's all coming your way. Then in Hebrews 3:12 it says, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." And this verse, it says, take heed again. It's also giving us more caution. But then it goes on a little more and talks about an evil heart of unbelief. And I believe that an evil heart an evil heart of unbelief is like disobedience, or actually, maybe not actually disobedience, but looking at obeying what God has commanded in not to sin or doctrines or what he has put it in the Bible, to look at those things as, well, I can obey this. This one I don't need, but this one I'll obey. You know, looking at it lightly, not looking at them seriously, that we do need to obey them. We do need to obey what God has taught us to obey, his teachings. And I think that that evil heart of unbelief is that's how I take that to mean. And we lose our we lose our love for God. We don't love Jesus like properly when we feel that way, when we have that thinking. And I'll actually go more over that later on. Then 1 Timothy 4:16 says, "Take heed unto thyself, unto the doctrine, continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt save thyself and them that hear thee." So this is obey God. Prove your love to God by obeying God first. And I'm going to say more about that later on too. But I think that there's three steps here that we need to, first of all, be cautious that we don't think that we've got it. We can always stand. That we think that we're going to be able to do anything, that we trust in God enough, and we don't really look around and we don't evaluate ourselves carefully enough. And then that we don't get this light opinion about obeying God. And then thirdly, that we, it says, take heed unto thyself. And this one's pointing right to me. Look at your life. Look at your life right now. And then compare it with onto the doctrine in the Bible, and then continue in them, obey them, go on with them. For if you do that, thou shalt save thyself, and also help them that hear thee. He was talking to Timothy. So far this message, I think I have been sounding a bit negative and maybe hopeless. Maybe more like the powers of the devil are too much for us to overcome, and I don't want to do that. I just want us to think seriously about what is it going to take for us to be faithful unto the end. These verses give us warning. They say, be careful. And I think that the reason the Bible writers were writing these cautions is not because they were wanting to discourage Christians, but they were wanting to warn them and encourage them. Because back there already, when Christianity was first introduced through Jesus, there was already Christians that were falling. There was people losing their salvation back then already. And we see it today too. We see it in our friends, in our relatives, and maybe hopefully we don't see it too much in our own lives. We stop in our own lives when we look at our own lives. But that's my reason for wanting to say this message. This has been, as I talked with some people, younger people and friends of mine, and I see how hard it is that they struggle with sin and things that go on around them. And I look at my life and I question, you know, the questions come sometimes, the doubts. It made me realize that, you know, we need to have a plan in place so that we can continue on being faithful through the years. I pray that we will be careful not to think that we are strong enough that we can idle long, or that we will get this incorrect belief about our thinking, or about how we believe in the Bible. So I want to encourage us this morning to have a plan for standing. Let's make a plan, and let's base it on the belief that Jesus is the one who can help us when the storms of life are raging. He has an anchor. Do we have that anchor? Will our anchor, is it in the right spot to hold? We need to believe that Jesus is the one with our entire mind and love him with all of our heart. And now I would like to look at a real strong example from the Old Testament in the Bible to help us look at this more carefully. And I'm going to look at the life of Joseph in the Bible. You know, the story of Joseph, when he was back in Egypt, he was alone from his family and from people who believed in God. Maybe there were some people that believed in God in Egypt. We don't know that. I mean, it doesn't really say that. But it seems like basically he was alone from the people of God. He was in a strange foreign land where people didn't honor God. In some ways, the Bible presents Joseph as a spoiled little boy. But I think we get that impression because Jacob, his father, cared for him in a more special way than he cared for his other sons. And Joseph was more special to Jacob. Honestly, he was. And because he was the last son of Rebekah, the wife he loved the most. And as you look at what Joseph did that upset his brothers the most, it seems like he may have been more than a spoiled child. I get the impression, and I don't want to make light of it, that he was a goody-two-shoes guy, sort of guy. He was the kind of guy that get to his brothers that, you know what, he had all figured out. Dad was there really helping him out all through life, and he'd come up to his brothers and get them back on the right track. And that's how it looks like. But I believe that in all that special attention that Jacob gave to his son Joseph, it paid off because Joseph came through some terrible things that took place in his life. And I think he was taught from Jacob that God cared for him. I think he was taught that God loved him. And I think most importantly, he was taught how important it is to obey God. I think that Jacob got that message into Joseph very good. And I'm not going by anything that the Bible says. I'm going by how Joseph came through, that for someone to be able to love God and continue on recognizing that everything was going to be okay and come through what he came through, I believe he had to have a strong faith and trusted God and wanted to please God. And what did he help? You know, Joseph had his faith in God in such ways that when the storms were hitting hard, he stood. What did he have that helped him to stand? You know, I just like to look a little more at his life. Even look at his experience. You know, he went down to help his brothers to find out how his brothers were doing, and they had no compassion. They were wicked. They took him and just they wanted to kill him, but they didn't have the heart to kill him. They were cowards, so they put him in a pit. And can you imagine how Joseph felt down in that deep pit alone, thinking that these guys actually do hate me? You know, I think that was a day of for him to actually recognize these guys, they actually hate me. They want rid of me. I can imagine that hurting, and then also being so hopeless that he felt that way. And then they pulled him back out and sold him to basically sort of like slave traders to go down to Egypt. And can you imagine going down there all the way to Egypt and you be in this shoes? What would your response be like? Just imagine if maybe Chad Mallinger over here, he was Joseph, and all his siblings went and did that to him. How would he feel? And he wouldn't tell all the rest of the kids, their parents, about it. It would be hard to overcome. It would be the hurt that goes with that is extreme. When your family actually goes against you, your siblings, and then you know that your father back home loves you and cares for you, and he's not going to know about it. He's not going to know what's going on, what they did to you. You know, and Joseph had to forgive. You'd have to forgive. You'd have to lay it down and go on and move on. I think to Joseph, that might have been a very huge storm in his life to come through that. And then when he got to Egypt, here he was among people that didn't believe in God. He was among people that didn't care about honoring God that we know of. The Bible does not give us details how Joseph overcame the storm, but it gives us a picture that God blessed him through it all, which leads me to believe that Joseph had enough teaching and faith to believe he needed to obey God regardless how he was mistreated, or regardless how strong the storm was around him, he believed that he needed to continue to trust God and obey God with his life. And so he obviously feared God more than man. And then while being blessed in Potiphar's house, he was given this another storm. Another storm. Things were starting to look up a little bit. But here comes another storm. You know, Potiphar's wife was attracted to Joseph and tried to get Joseph to sin. And Joseph's answer to her is in Genesis 39:9. He says, "There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath it kept back, hath my master kept anything back from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And I think this temptation was a big storm for Joseph. I think it was a huge storm. But if I try to compare, I almost think that the storm that he faced when he got sold into Egypt to forgive his family might have been harder for him to do. I don't know. I don't know that. I just wondered about that. The important thing for us to understand is that both of these storms were connected. Of him being mistreated and sold into Egypt, and then also him being tempted by Potiphar's wife. Those are both really strong testing in his life. And I think both of those tests were connected to each other. If Joseph had failed in forgiving his brothers, if he had failed in forgiving them and moving on with his life in the first storm, I'm not sure that he could have withstood the second storm. And I think this as we look at this verse, it will reveal more about this. But I first of all want to look at the short version of what is it going to take for us. What is the leading thing that it's going to take for us to be faithful, for each of us to stand, and then go through this about this verse, how Joseph stood to back that up. But I think that the thing that we need, that each of us needs to have, and I think Joseph had it too, is we need to have a strong desire to please God, to please Jesus. We need to have a strong desire to do that. And I have heard this said, and I've said it myself before too, and you've heard it before. But but sometimes I don't feel like I have a desire to please Jesus, and then I feel guilty because I don't feel that desire. I just don't feel it. I want to please Jesus, but I don't feel that desire to really want to. And then I start wondering, well, what do I need to do, or what's wrong? So I could feel that desire. And all that really happens is, in the end, I've made this complete cycle in my mind about what should I do? How do I get this desire to grow so that I really want to please Jesus correctly? And I come back down to that I need to read my Bible, I need to pray, and I need to study more, and I'll have the victory, and the feeling will come back. And I don't want to make light of that, but I think that the point, I don't want to make light of reading the Bible. I think those do bring us closer. I think that's what we should do. But the point that I miss, and I think that each of us are tempted to miss so many times about this thinking, is that I'm trying to make this whole process about having a strong desire to please Jesus, I'm making an emotional process. I'm trying to get my feelings all to be connected with this thing. And that's, I believe, is what gets us messed up, gets me messed up. So standing is not emotional process, because our emotions, they come and go. And praise God, we do have feelings sometimes, and we have a strong desire. It's a blessing, and we appreciate it. But having a strong desire to please Jesus is a logical process, and that's what I really want us to recognize this morning. It's a logical process. And I want to go back to Joseph's life and make that point more clear. You know, when Potiphar's wife threw herself on Joseph, I think that was a big temptation to Joseph. It was huge. It was a huge storm. And I don't think it was easy for Joseph to stand strong. If he would have been using his emotions to stand, I think he would have failed because his emotions weren't speaking the right message. I think his emotions were not saying, I just have this strong desire to please God, and I just want to please God. I don't think that was saying that to him. I think his emotions were just making him feel flattered, just totally flattered that she was attracted to him. That's what I think his emotions were telling him. And they weren't working for truth or right. They were working against him at that very moment. Therefore, I believe it's practical logic that helped him to stand. Not saying that God doesn't give us strength to stand. No, I'm saying that God gives us strength to have a sound mind, to think clearly during those times when we're going through the hard storms. This verse says there, Joseph said in his mind, and he, I don't know if he said that or how the story got repeated for the writer to write it down this way, but Joseph obviously told someone, repeated it down through the ages. He said, there is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That's what Joseph, he told Potiphar's wife there. How that got recorded down through the ages, I don't know, but that's a very important verse. That verse has a lot of good for us to remember. It's a very logical verse. In Joseph, when he was saying these words, I think he was thinking, that's true. There is nobody greater in this house. This is what Potiphar brought me. He brought me to the highest level in this house. And my master has shown me everything. He has put everything in my charge. There's nothing that it is in charge of anything, but I am the highest. And he trusts me. He believes in me. He doesn't ever believe that I would have a relationship with his wife. So when Joseph's mind saying these thoughts, I also think that he's thinking, if I would give in to this temptation, what do I have to lose? I'm going to lose all that. And on top of that, I have been blessed by what God has done for me since I've come to Egypt. Since I've been sent down here, God has protected me. He's given me strength. He's given me so many blessings. And I'll lose that too. If I submit to this temptation, I'll lose that on top of it all. So his logical mind was thinking about all these things that are going to change and he's going to lose, and it's going to destroy his life if he submits to that. And then he could have been thinking that, I think in his mind he could have been reminded that how much God cares for him. And I am what I am right now because of what God did for me since I've been here. And then he says, how then could I do this great wickedness in sin against God? Because he remembered what God had been doing for him. And he would lose that too. He was counting the cost. If I do this great sin, I will lose my position. I will lose God's blessing in my life. And then he also may have thought, I will go to prison because I deserve it. I will go to prison because I deserve it instead of because I'm being tested. I would much rather go to prison because I'm being tested and I did the right thing than because I sinned. And I think he would have went to prison either way. Those are all things that I think his logical mind were telling him during that time. It was that was keeping him strong, his logical desire to please God. So to make this even a little more clear, I said that the ingredient that we need to have to be able to stand is a strong desire to please God. His strong desire to please God was not a feeling, but a memory of what God had done for him. First, he believed that the only reason he had the position that he had was because God blessed him, and the only reason that he had so many blessings in his life was because God loved him and protected him. His memory reminded him of good and bad feelings he experienced back there when he was first sold into Egypt. How he felt so angry at his brothers and the terrible things that happened to him, and how God protected him from all that. He remembered those things and he counted the cost. So today, if you and I don't have a strong desire to please God, I think that we're not going to last. If we get tested, and testing does come, are we going to hold? Will our anchor hold if we don't have that? And a strong desire to please God is essentially having the fear of the Lord in our hearts properly. If we do not have that, then we more than likely have the fear of man too much in our heart. We're scared what other people think. I'm afraid that I have that too much sometimes. And if we want to stand for what is right, we have to stand for what we have been taught. And we have to have a logical desire to please God. We need to draw close to God in a logical way. And we should love God by obeying him. In my opinion, in so many people try to obey God by loving him. We want to feel love for God to obey him, to motivate our obedience. But I think our love to God comes from our obedience. Many times loving God does not feel good because we're instructed to obey him while our emotions are not speaking the feeling. We don't feel that love, but we're still supposed to obey. And that is loving him, obeying. You may not see a difference. Maybe I'm just, to you, I'm speaking in circles. But I think there is a difference. Trying to obey God by loving him is trying to love God with your feelings and emotions. And I was trying to think of how to say this more clearly, and I will tell on myself a little bit. But in our family, we have this thing, and I know you guys have it probably too, but your hot water heater is you might think this is a crazy illustration, but your hot water heater doesn't have enough water to give 6 people hot showers, especially on Sunday morning. And I enjoy a nice hot shower, and maybe some of you do too, but anyhow, this morning I was thinking about this thing while I was showering and enjoying the shower, and it struck me that's the answer, that's it. You know, I love my family, but I love the feeling of this hot shower, and I want to take more water and more water. But if I actually love my family, what I'll do, I'll shut that water off and obey what will actually prove to them love. So, you see, that's how we prove Jesus, our love to Jesus, is by first obeying him, doing what we don't actually have a feeling for. And that proves our love. That's what I'm trying to say. So it came to me this morning that, well, I want to keep on showering, but if they want hot water, I need to shut it off now. I have to obey first. That will show them love, my family love. So that's sort of a crude illustration, but it gets the point across, I hope. Loving God is logically obeying him. That is the correct way. It will give us more strength to stand the storm when the storms hit us. And also look at Daniel's life. Daniel in the lion's den, when they set up the law that if he continued to pray out that window, it would have been so simple for him to quit praying, but it wasn't about pleasing men, it was about pleasing God. He knew that meant a lot to God to see what he kept praying. And he went to the lion's den. He put it all on the line. And I also had to think of Peter, and I'm not sure, you know, Peter, I said that Peter failed. He denied Christ. But I don't think that many of us would be much stronger than Peter in the same circumstances. Maybe we would. I don't want to put anybody in that judgment. But I think that I was trying to understand about Peter, why he failed. What did he do that he didn't have? But I think it was just that he had this, the fear of man was over him at that point. But when he came out of that, when he stood strong afterwards, I think that he came out stronger than ever. And his logic was involved with that, because he remembered what Jesus did for him when he was tempted next time or wanted to do other things, and he wanted to give everything off of that memory, what Jesus had done for him and how Jesus loved him. I'm sure there's someone who's going through a storm here this morning. And how are you standing? If you can't say that you're going through a storm this morning, or if you want to overcome and go to be with Jesus, you're going to face some storms in life. Or if you're not willing to obey and have a logical desire to please God, you'll get blown away. You'll get blown wherever that storm will take you. And there is no assurance of salvation when you're going through a storm if you don't have your faith in Jesus correctly. So in closing, I'm afraid that I've made this thing too practical or made it too logical and taken the Holy Spirit out of serving Jesus. And I don't want to do that. I believe there are many times there is a spiritual experience in our lives that emotion has an effect in our lives, and we're emotional about it. I'm not saying that emotions are always wrong, but you cannot depend on them to stand. God created emotions for us to be able to feel and to have compassion and happiness and to experience sorrow, and even when we have anger build up in our lives or whatever feeling we have about what we are going through. We need to have those emotions help us to cope with some of those situations. God wants us to have feelings and use them for good reasons, but not for our foundation to stand on. So the two things that I really hope that I can encourage you with for this week is to be able to faithfully stand, you need to have a logical desire to please God. And you need to prove, we need to prove our love for Jesus by obeying him. I'll just leave it there. Another little illustration that in a marriage relationship, and there are many other illustrations you could use this way, but in a marriage relationship, you don't feel like loving your spouse 100% of the time. And what kicks in to keep your marriage still going on when you don't feel that love? It's simple obedience, that I'm going to stay married. That's all it is. That's what it is. And so I think that is a foundation that we can have, that we have to remember. We have to go back and remember what Jesus did for us back there, not based on our feelings, what we're feeling. We have to remember what he actually did for us and base our salvation on those issues rather than the other. That's all I have, and I thank you for your attention.